All right, Josh Turner from Seven Seeds in Carlton. Thank you so much for joining me on 2SER this morning.
Oh, most welcome, mate. Happy to be here.
Okay, well, do you want to start by telling us about what Seven Seeds is?
Yeah, so Seven Seeds, at its essence, I guess, is a roastery. We started off roughly 12 years ago now down in Melbourne, but we fly all over the world sourcing coffee, bringing it back to Australia, roasting it up and serving it to the public.
12 years ago is quite a long time in the world of specialty coffee. There wasn't huge amounts of it around when you guys got started, right?
No, not at all. So Mark Dundon, one of the owners, is kind of seen culturally around the traps as, I guess, he doesn't like the term, but I guess the godfather of the industry in some respects. So he's got, you know, a really, really great global reputation for what he does, and particularly in the last couple of years with, you know, completely making our books transparent in terms of our sourcing and really, really pushing for better pricing for the farmers.
Can you tell us a bit about what you mean by fair prices for farmers? What is the issue that is being tackled by the way that Seven Seeds approaches its purchasing?
So I guess there's a bit of a misconception with the word specialty coffee. So, you know, back in the day, specialty coffee, we're talking 10, 15 years ago, would have been judged on its cup score when you evaluated the coffee, and anything that was, you know, over a certain score, I think it might have been like 88 out of 100, was deemed a specialty. The issues that we're having at the moment in the industry is that there's a lot of places that have opened up calling themselves specialty, but in fact are either going through in between buyers or directly sourcing themselves, and they're undercut the farmer on the price of the coffee. So coffee's traded on the stock market like most commodities. For an example, say the seed price of a coffee bean or their trade price would be something like $1.20 American a pound. In all reality, it costs a producer somewhere in the range of like $2.50 to $3 American to produce that coffee. So we've made our books completely transparent to the public and have been a real industry leader in that fact, just showing that you need to pay a lot more for high quality coffee to make the industry sustainable, and even, you know, for the producers and the families that create such great coffee, for them to do the basic things like send their kids to school, have you know, a roof over their head and better farms, better practices, better milling stations, better washing stations, all those types of things.
Awesome. That's great work. Okay, so we are here to talk about the best ways to make coffee at home. Obviously, a lot of people are spending a lot of time at home during these times of isolation. So, Joss, what are the most important first things to remember when making good coffee at home?
Okay, so it really all starts with having great coffee at home. If you're buying some of that pre-ground, vac-sealed stuff from Audi, you're going to be at a disadvantage straight away. So I would hunt down your favourite cafe or roastery if you have one near you. Speak to the guys there, kind of work out what you like in coffee. Do you like fruity coffee? Do you like full-bodied coffee? Do you like something that's a little bit more chocolatey? And then try and source some really, really great local products and bring that home as a starting point.
And now, am I buying these as beans, or can I get it? Is it best for me to get it ground there, or should I grind it myself?
Look, in an ideal world, everyone would have a grinder at home. As soon as you grind coffee, you start to lose a lot of the intensity of the flavour pretty much almost instantly. So having a bag of ground coffee sit at home for a month, the flavours are not going to be as beautiful or as intense as they could be. So yeah, if you've got a grinder at home, that's ideal. Grind just before you're about to make your coffee at home.
Is there any preferred type of grinder? Does any sort of electric grinder work? Do we want hand grinders? Is there anything special people need to be looking out for when it comes to that?
Look, there's some great electric grinders on the market, and there's some really awesome hand grinders on the market. So I guess, you know, it all kind of comes down to your budget to begin with. So when I was getting myself into coffee, I bought like a cheaper little hand grinder, and it absolutely did the job, made all the difference. And then, you know, the more and more you start to really, really enjoy coffee and get into it, you can definitely upgrade your equipment at home, and getting a good grinder is definitely one of the best things you can ever do for yourself.
How about bean storage? I have a nice little sort of airtight container for my beans. Some people put them in the freezer, some put them in the fridge. What is the tip on bean storage at home?
Bean storage 101, just like what you're doing. Airtight container, out of direct sunlight. So you can just bosh it in your pantry.
All right, there's a bunch of different ways to make coffee at home. Let's run through a few of these different methodologies. Tell me about pour overs.
Pour overs are great for, I guess, your more filter style coffees. It's kind of like a cone shaped little dripper with a paper filter. Great for a single cup, or you can get a larger version and bang out two cups at one time. So it's good for, I guess, showcasing the little subtle nuances of coffee, the acidity, the body mouthfeel, and obviously that fruit flavor that you're kind of searching for.
Okay, and what's the equipment that I need? Is it an easy thing to start doing, getting into pour-over coffee?
Yeah, it's going to set you back maybe like $20. You get a little, like a pour-over cone. Hario makes some really great, affordable plastic ones. They last forever. And then you just need the paper filters, and that's it, and a kettle.
Easy. Okay, let's talk about French presses. That was something else that you mentioned. What do people need to know? Is this the same as a plunger?
Same dog, different leg, that bad boy. French press or plunger, depending on what you want to call it.
And so how do people make the perfect plunger coffee at home?
Oh, plunger is one of my favorites. It's super, super easy, super, super consistent. So basically, depending on your plunger size, we kind of roll with 30 grams of coffee to like half a liter of water. That's going to be in the vicinity of about kind of 4 tablespoons of ground coffee. So basically, fire up your kettle. As soon as the kettle's boiled, let it sit there for a couple of minutes. You don't really want to brew coffee at 100-degree boiling water. It's going to kind of make your coffee taste a little bit on that bitter side of things. So let the kettle sit there for a couple of minutes. Bring it down to kind of like that 95, 96-degree mark. Chuck your 4 tablespoons of coffee in the bottom of your plunger. Pour the water all the way up to the top. Give it a nice stir to make sure all that coffee is nice and saturated and evenly wet. Then what I like to do is just, I don't put the lid on it yet. I just put like a little saucer or a little plate over the top just to retain some of that heat. Set a timer on your phone, your microwave, whatever you have need, for 4 minutes. Once that 4 minute timer goes off, take your little saucer or plate off the top of your plunger, and you'll see that you'll have this like crust of coffee at the top. So just get your spoon, just break that crust, all the coffee grounds will sink back down to the bottom of your plunger or French press, and you'll be left with like small little kind of like cremery sort of residue on the top of the liquid. Simply scrape that off with your spoon, plunge away, and get yourself a delicious cup of coffee.
Awesome. It's probably one of the easiest and most well-known ways to make really good coffee, but I think going back to what you were saying earlier, if you do it properly and if you have fresh beans and you grind them yourself, then you can't really go wrong with a plunger or a French press.
Absolutely, yeah. They're super consistent, super delicious, and very, very, very easy to make, very tasty coffee at home.
And what about coffee machines? I've never had much success trying to make a coffee from a domestic coffee machine. What are they like?
Yeah, they can be a little bit tricky. I guess it all comes down to, again, probably find yourself getting better results if you have a grinder at home as well as a home little coffee machine. Or you can even buy, I guess, those ones that have little built-in grinders. I think what most people come into troubles with the home espresso machine is they have ground coffee and a machine that doesn't brew under a great amount of pressure. And if your coffee grinds are too fine, it's going to get super, super clogged up and not be very tasty. Then conversely, if your coffee is pre-ground and it's too coarse, it's just going to gush out like water. So it's all about finding that happy medium and kind of playing around with that grind size to make a nice shot of espresso.
Okay, so like everything, it's just about fine-tuning it to get it working for you, but it does take a while with these ones.
Yeah, it can be a little finicky, but, you know, with practice, you can definitely get over the line pretty quickly. I think there's, you know, there's plenty of little tutorials online that you can watch on YouTube and fall deep down that rabbit hole if you like. But for me, for making coffee at home, I think, you know, making a plunger or an AeroPress or one of those things, I get better results that way.
Okay. Tell me about pod machines. In this world of convenience that we live in these days, people want the easiest method of making whatever they can as quickly as possible, as easy as possible. So putting a pod into a machine and pressing a button seems to be the easiest. So a lot of people are using them. Tell me about what you think.
Oh, I think they're the devil. They ain't great at all. They're, you know, environmentally, they're not a great thing with all the leftover pods. They're just not awesome. You're getting kind of freeze-dried coffee in these little pods. There's no traceability with the coffee itself that's in there. Coffee doesn't taste very good. I don't think a coffee should have a 2-year shelf life in those little pods. I would try and avoid those at all costs. Even for convenience sake.
I think that's interesting when you talk about the traceability of the coffee that's in there. You have no idea where it's coming from, who's getting paid, how much they're getting paid, what impact it's having on the economics of a village wherever the coffee might be grown.
Exactly. Yeah, the no traceability thing's a big one. You really don't know what coffee you're getting in there. It could be a blend of 20 really, really poorly grown, poorly graded, poorly sourced coffees, all just roasted, grinded up, frozen, snapped into a bloody little piece of plastic.
Doesn't sound ideal. To finish off, Joss, it'd be remiss of us to not touch on how this pandemic is affecting the hospitality industry in which you work. Can you give our listeners some information about how they might be able to support their local cafes or people doing it tough in the hospitality industry or in the coffee industry that you work in?
Yeah, I think like you touched on it even in the question. I think it's all about kind of really supporting the little guy and supporting the local. You know, there's a lot of small businesses in every community throughout Australia and the world that are having it really, really tough at the moment. So it's finding some solidarity with your community, avoiding using, I guess, some of these takeaway services like Uber Eats and Deliveroo. The percentage of their fee is astronomical, and they kind of have the industry bent over a little bit at the moment with people, you know, not being able to freely access as many things as they want. So small businesses are in a little tricky position, whereas they, you know, they want to stay open, they want to be able to provide the community with their great product. And some of these delivery services, you know, they're not doing the right thing. So to support your community and the locals is the best way. So, you know, go to your little greengrocer on the corner as opposed to going to your big chain supermarket. Go to your local cafes, ask the people there where they get their dinner from. You know, everyone in the hospitality industry, we're all interconnected in some way. So, you know, your person that makes your coffee in the morning at your local cafe is probably friends with the person, you know, it's a restaurant around the corner. It's speaking to the locals and just trying to support them as much as possible, I guess.
And if you want to dip your toes into the world of perfecting coffee at home, it can be as easy as going to your favorite cafe and asking them if you can buy a bag of fresh beans off them.
Absolutely. Particularly in times like this, obviously, you know, they've probably got a little bit more time on their hands to have an in-depth yarn to you about, you know, best ways of making their coffee, how they suggest it, and they can really, really talk you through, you know, helping you decide on the right coffee for how you like to drink it, really.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we've had a pretty in-depth yarn ourselves this morning. Joss, thank you so much for joining me on 2SER.
No worries, mate. You have a good one.